Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is May 22. I'm guessing like a motherfucker.
Memorial Day weekend is this weekend, which does that mean anything?
Nothing. Somebody said that to me the other day. I was like, yeah, and every day is Saturday. What the fuck? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it means nothing. I mean, you know what it means, though, is for New York, and I guess in around the country, too, it means that, you know, beaches and stuff are not open here anyway. And
it's but some of our beaches are opening on June 1st.
Yeah.
On June 1st. Yeah, but I'm saying for Memorial Weekend, it won't be open. So, you know, that usual go to the beach, go to the park, the cookouts. Like,
no, the shore.
Going over Broad House to get some ribs. That shit's dead.
I can still come through for a drive-through. You know, I'll bring you out, please.
Put me a little styrofoam.
No aluminum foil. We just put the other styrofoam plate on top.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? I bring some saran wrap that motherfucker up. Keep it going. Memorial Day means jack shit. I mean, I saw somebody tweet this a while ago, and I guess maybe it won't happen, but somebody said, wait, you want to see white people riot? Wait to see what happens if they cancel 4th of July.
Word life.
If they go to 4th of July, you know, social distancing, stay in the house, fireworks. Shit. This should be like World War III in this motherfucker, man. You know, but how y'all doing with all this?
I'm hanging in there. I mean, you know, it's starting to I don't know. It's weird. I was telling somebody. I was like, I feel like I have no idea what's going on. Like, I feel like I know what's going on in the world because of the news and Twitter and stuff. But I feel like I have
in the world, Craig.
But I feel like I have no idea what's going on in my city. Like, you could tell me. Well, a perfect example: 125th Street was on fire the other day.
Yeah,
I was like, oh damn. You know what I mean? It might as well be on the other side of the country. Like,
Detroit. Yeah. <laughs> Exactly. It's odd. And apparently, there was another fire on 125th Street the day or two later at the Taste of Seafood on the east side.
Oh, no.
Burned down. And you know
what? That's my job.
And you know who posted it? Puma from Black Ink.
That's hilarious.
She posted it on Twitter.
But you know what's fucked up about that is that when I saw the first fire, which was further up on 125th Street, I was looking like, is that close to Taste of Seafood? No bullshit, because that's my
wow.
Shit.
Yeah,
that was damn. It's gone.
But you know, there's another seafood joint. It's definitely arson. It's definitely arson. Like, there's no way you're going to convince me otherwise.
Right.
And just for side, you know, I know we're being very insular here, but there's another Taste of Seafood on 8th Avenue in like the 130s. If you want to go,
okay. I think I didn't know that.
It'd be mad crowded. It'd be packed, but like you can get your fries, scrimps, and your whiting.
Scrimps and
yeah,
and your whiting. Yeah, exactly. On point.
Yeah. But we were talking like right before we started taping, and I was very interested because bro was saying that he had to go into the city today to do some, you know, some business, and I was saying I was outside earlier, riding my bike and working out in the park, and I realized I haven't been past like. Really past Harlem much. I rode the Central Park like kind of one day, but besides that, I haven't really been past Harlem in like 3 months. I 1/10 is kind of like my cutoff. I didn't really usually go that far, honestly.
Right.
And so what I'm finding is in kind of watching the internet, so it's obviously shoddy research, but what I'm finding is New York, and I don't know how it is in other cities, but New York is becoming very segregated in that. People who, wherever you live, that's kind of more or less where people are kind of staying. So if you live in Manhattan, for example, if you live, me and I live in Washington Heights kind of /Inwood area, and that's where we stay. up here. You know, everything is up here, supermarket, whatever, is here. People in Harlem pretty much stay in Harlem. People in Soho and Tribeca, if they're even, first of all, those people aren't even here. But a lot of them are gone. But if they are here.
Right, they broke out.
They broke out, yeah. For the most part, they broke out. But the ones that still are here, they're kind of staying in their sections. So it's like no sections are crossing because nobody wants to get on the train or the bus or an Uber, for that matter, to travel to different parts of the city. So people are just kind of staying wherever they live. That's what I'm finding. And, you know, so I haven't been, I was saying, like, Midtown, like we said, Midtown might as well be D.C. I ain't been down there. I ain't got no reason to go down there.
I don't think I've been, because I work from home, period. I honestly don't think I've been in Midtown in all, I don't think I've been in Midtown in all of March, because, or at least not the past the first, like, maybe the first or second. Like, because I had a couple of meetings the first week of the coronavirus. Because the first week was my mom's birthday, so I was in the house most of that week. I don't know if I had just come back from out of town somewhere or something, but I don't know what happened. But anyway, I was in the house most of that week. I had a couple of meetings that first week that the virus was becoming news, but before we were, after we had some positive cases, but before we were shut down, and I was just like, I'm not even bothering with it because I don't feel like being around a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went into shutdown. But I haven't been on the fucking subway. Like, you could tell me anything is happening anywhere, I'd be like, word. Because I just,
wow, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
Brother, how was it in Midtown? Is there a lot of traffic now?
No, it wasn't a lot of traffic, but you can definitely see an uptick in movement. Yeah. Like that first time when I spoke about it, it was like a fucking ghost town, bro. Like a legitimate ghost town.
Was
like,
nobody out.
I put it to you like this. I could have parked anywhere.
Mm.
Today, I kind of had to wait a little bit. I ran to pick up a package. And then, I double parked. No ticket. And
no problem.
No hassle. You see a lot more deliveries. There's a lot of things. Like, I saw quite a few, like, either security trucks, elevator trucks. I'm assuming that they're going into, while they have this downtime to sort of make sure the buildings are getting inspections and things of that nature. So you saw a lot of that. You didn't see a lot of commercial activity. You know, a hot dog man here, there, but it wasn't like super crazy.
It wasn't crazy,
Yo, dude, I parked on 6th Avenue today.
Yes, that's crazy.
I parked on 44th and 6th.
That's insane. I didn't even think that was possible.
On a Thursday?
Like, that's not even possible in real life. Yeah.
Parked, got out the car,
left the car,
across the street, walked across the street, went to the bank, was good, like, you know.
Good money.
Did what I needed to do, and came on out. You know, I did the run across the street like the nigga in the fake society.
The fake jog.
Yeah, fake jog.
I was looking both ways.
Yeah. But I was good, though.
Yeah. Yes, it's, I don't know. It's our city is, it's funny. I was on, Faith Newman, who's a A&R person too. She's a publishing person now. I've known her for a long time. She sent me a link to her Facebook thing that she had written, and she was asking people, New Yorkers specifically, if they were thinking about moving or had moved, since, all this happened. And surprisingly, there was a lot of people on there that was like, yeah, either I'm out or I'm about to be out, because Faith is actually moving.
Is Faith a native New Yorker?
No, she's from Philly, but she's been here since the 80s.
But I have a theory about this. So this happened after September 11th. I found that people who weren't from here were very much like, I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And people who were from here, had family roots here, were like, whatever, we keep it moving. That was something that I found. So I'd be curious. But although I do hear a lot of people not just saying they're leaving New York, but like, you know, a lot of people talking about leaving the country, but it's not just about this. It's about this plus Trump plus
Trump is everything. Yeah.
They be talking that bullshit, man. They say that shit every year. I'm leaving New York. I'm about out of this mother. And this ain't no disrespect to that woman, Faith. You know what I'm saying? But like, I hear that shit so much. You know?
Yeah.
Like, listen, I'll be the first to tell you the tri-state area is grossly overrated. If you needed to put your quality of life in comparison to you know, what it costs to live, all of those sorts of things. You know, it's an overrated experience sometimes, right? But then people get here and it's just like, you know, it kind of is what it is. And then there's like every time New York can be flying sexy, it's like we out.
I gotta go.
Like you said, I gotta go. I don't like, nigga, it's been small apartments. This ain't nothing new.
Ain't no central AC.
None.
It has never been.
None of the issues we're talking about are new New Yorkers. Yeah. Which is why we're like, why are y'all tripping? Like, you know, back in the days, people wasn't paying $2,000 a month for a fucking, you know, 800 square feet, but they was paying $400 and $500, which was a considerable amount of money back then,
with inflation, you know, and all that. Yeah,
like when people talk about all of these other locations in New York, like, listen, I understand that there's some level of gentrification, okay, but there was never, I don't ever remember Clinton Hills being a fucking poor place. Okay, you was living down in Clinton Hills, you was living down in Fort Greene in that area, living in one of them brownstones.
You was
nobody was missing meals at the crib. Okay? Word. They had plenty of park space. You go down to Pratt Institute or go to LIU or all that shit. None of that shit's new, bro.
So I thought that was interesting that people like on the thing, like, I'm leaving, I'm getting out of here.
And another thing, and I'm sorry to kind of rant because I'm a little angry with this shit. Another thing, where y'all going? Where the fuck y'all going?
Right,
oh, y'all think it's sweet? Y'all think y'all just gonna go down to ATL and get
and it's gonna be fun
for $350? You think that shit's still popping? You think it's 1996?
And ATL wants people to come back. They like, stop coming. We full.
Yeah, exactly. Go somewhere. Go to Charlotte.
I was just about to say. Y'all think y'all gonna go to Charlotte? And you think it's gonna be sweet? You think you're going to go down there? You think you're going to get you a condo for $45,000?
Exactly. Nine bedrooms, six and a half baths for 75 grand.
Think again.
Oh, shit. So, New York is home. It's a tough place to live and all that, but you know what I mean?
You better go get you some land in Alabama, nigga, if you want
work. Go down to Arkansas and get you a spread. You know what I'm saying?
Get you something about two hours out of Mobile.
Word. about 350 miles out of whatever coal flies from Jacksonville. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you can go down there if you want, nigga. But I always tell people, you know, I mean, Atlanta's actually a little different, but for the most part, like, if you're gonna move to certain places, like, just be prepared, man, because your life, like, all that shit, that your lifestyle is going to be completely different. So that's the real trade-off. Like, you're going to be in the house every night anyway. You got a big night out is going to Olive Garden. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna that's a dope meal. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be going to the movies a lot.
This nigga said the Olive Garden.
You know what I'm saying? You're going to be ordering a whole lot of fried. You're going to be eating a whole lot of fried shit. Your blood pressure and diabetes and shit's going to go up. Like, your whole shit is different.
Well, now, meal options, restaurant options have changed and even in flyover states and cities.
But them niggas still going. Them niggas still going. You saw that clip of them niggas outside that goddamn Red Lobster acting like they was
in. He's acting like a fool.
Acting like they was in Mr. Chow's.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying? Them niggas. It ain't changed that much. A nigga still love a cheddar biscuit and a lobster tail dipped in some butter. God bless y'all niggas. Let's get on into it, man. Real quick, I saw a clip yesterday that really moved me. I want to say peace to a little boy named Dontrell and his teacher named Ms. Gleason. So Dontrell graduated high school. I did research a little bit. It's in Nashville, and so after they couldn't have a ceremony, so it's a clip of him, and he's in the car with his mom. His mom is filming him, and the boy's like literally like crying. He's yelling out the window to all the faculty because they're clapping as the cars go by, and he's like, "Thank you, Miss Dean Bell. I graduated. Thank you."
Aww.
Oh, it's beautiful, and his mom is. You know, we know his mom. She's playing gospel in the car. And she's like, "Yes, No.
Did you say, wait, did you say this is high school or middle school?
High school.
Oh,
high
it is
school.
A high school graduate.
Was it, yeah. Wasn't she speaking? Did she speak in tongues at one part?
She almost did. She was I'm so proud of you, Dontrell. I'm so proud of you. You know what I'm saying? And then he's yelling out the window to like all the faculty. And you can I don't know any of the backstory, but I took it as he, you know, maybe he had a little bit of a rough time, but he hunkered down and really like got it done. You know?
Oh, he was on the ropes. I was on the ropes cry. That was all these people rallied around me. Yes. They didn't abandon me cry.
Yes. Yes.
That right. was, they knew I could do this. It, you know, you can tell they were, yo, the cops, they know him by name. So
clearly
he's either a fuck up or a great student.
Yeah.
The only
yeah.
time people know your name is when you're a fuck up or a great student. Yeah. There's no in between.
And I think he probably went from one to the other. He was fucking clicked in him. And he hunkered down.
That support system.
Because like I said, and to his credit, he's wildly respectful of everybody. Oh, yeah. He's like Miss So and So, Dean Such and Such. Like he's like you could tell he's that kid that like he just needed a kick in the pants. So he after the security guard, which bro just said, he's like, I'm proud of you, bro. I'm proud of you, boy. He Nacho's coming out and thing, and he sees I guess probably his favorite teacher. Whose name is Miss Gleason. And he starts like yelling her name from like way down the block. Miss Gleason, I graduated. I love you too, Miss Gleason. Aww. And so he gets to the corner and he turns the corner and Miss Gleason is there. She's in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And she's like, his mom opens the sunroof and he's sitting outside on the sunroof and waving to people. And she's like, get that off that car and come
home. That's hilarious.
And he jumps off the car. And like they have this like crazy hug. It's like you can tell like it's like that's his girl. Like that's like you say something about Miss Gleason, that nigga's fucking you up. Like you know what I'm saying? Like on site. Like don't talk about Miss Gleason, nigga. Miss Gleason might be at the house for Thanksgiving on the low. You know what I'm saying? So like it was a beautiful clip. Like it was really and people like you know a lot of retweets and people talking about Rex Chapman. Posted it. You know we've got a great Twitter feed. And people like asking for like their
Oh yeah, he always posts those super stuff feel like good.
Exactly, so, yeah. And people asking for their social media and everything, so they can just kind of reach out to them. So it was just a really nice feel good clip. So I mean, Dontro kind of represents to me, you know, what this class of 2020 has to deal with, which is not having an actual graduation. You know, they have to do either Zoom graduations or like what they did at this high school in Nashville, where like people can just kind of like drive their car and wait, talk to the faculty.
But I gotta say though, they've been more like the class of 2020 has been way more resilient about this than I feel like I would have been.
Yeah.
For college. I didn't even walk for college. I didn't give a fuck by that point. But for high school.
Yeah.
I was like really emotional about leaving my friends and you know, all that type of stuff. And
they had no prom. They had no prom.
Right. And they had no prom. And I think that, both prom and graduation have gotten so giant. Like, maybe this will be a good little bit of a reset. I hate to say that at the expense of 2020, but they've gotten so giant. But the kids seem to have really just been rolling with it. Like, my goddaughter is valedictorian. And she was like, yeah. Like, she really was like, what? You know, she took pictures. They did a drive-through. Decorated their car. It was like, whatever.
I think one of the things that we don't anticipate and we don't think about because the kids are so engrossed in this part of the graduation process, which is the prom and all of the pomp and circumstance, is that it is an enormous amount of pressure. And I think that we're seeing kids that are probably more relieved that they don't have to worry about this. Like there is a, you know, particularly if you go to a certain kind of school.
Yeah.
There's an expectation of what you know, who you take to the prom, what you're going to wear to the prom. You know, like
car you're going to drive.
The fucking kid had a fucking like Lamborghini and a giraffe.
You know,
all of that. But all that does is it trickles down the pressure to make kids feel like they need to do this sort of stuff.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, the speeches. And I think that all of the, just everything that kind of comes with that ticket requests and, you know, all of the pulling, the tugging, where you going to go to eat, you got to take everybody.
Yeah.
Uncle Junior can't go down there. They don't let him. They don't let Uncle Junior into that restaurant no more. Exactly.
He acted a fool one day, and then
he showed his ass one day, and so we can't go there. You know, it's all of those things because having kind of done a graduation last year.
Yeah, recently.
I can see how it can be overwhelming for a student and a family. How it's a lot to take in.
It is. And I mean, to that point, and I've actually had this conversation with a couple of people recently. I think, and this is a whole way bigger issue than, you know, prom graduation, but I just think that, you know, I mean, honestly, like, really on a spiritual level, man, I think, like, this whole shutdown thing was a pause, obviously, of the world to kind of stop, in my opinion, and kind of reassess, like, what the hell
are
you doing?
Now we're being so goddamn extra for everything.
Yeah, exactly. With everything. Like I'm saying, now you can't go shopping. You can't buy. I mean, you can't go online, go to Amazon and act like a fool, but like, why are you buying this shit? You ain't got nowhere to go. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think that it's been a pause and a reset in a lot of ways. And I like that point.
Agreed.
About like that point, bro, about like even something like this, a graduation and prom, like, wait a minute, like, we got kids taking helicopters to prom. What the fuck are we doing?
Yo, and weddings. I think you might see an increase in home purchases because you're not under that gun to drop $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on a wedding.
Yep.
And run up the debt. And I know that weddings have gone down considerably. But, you know, people are still doing those big ass weddings.
Absolutely.
And a lot of that shit is pressure from family, pressure from friends.
Stunts for the gram.
You're giving, they have an out now. They have a legitimate out. And so I think what you're going to see is people really taking stock in that sort of stuff. And listen, I think that there are people who actually enjoy the pomp and circumstance as well.
Yeah.
And guess what? When this is over, you know what? We'll do a reception next year.
Yeah. My cousin, peace of love to my cousin Kendra. She got married Saturday past her husband Chris on Zoom.
I saw the picture.
Yeah, I saw you post that.
Yeah. They were supposed to obviously have a wedding, and with everything that happened, they weren't able to do it. And as opposed to like, let's just push it next year so we can have a big old shindig. They were like, nah. So they put it on Zoom. There was maybe 8 to 10 people there at the actual thing. They were in a park out of Queens. They had a Zoom. They did it. You know, we obviously, a bunch of people tuned in on Zoom, watched them get married, and that was it. You said, and they ended up saving the whole grip of bread, you know, the whole grip of bread. And, you know, my son Julian, he's getting married, supposed to get married in October. His wedding got pushed till next year. And, you know, I'm hoping maybe they decide, you know, maybe to kind of tone it down. Just because of the money, you know, like, yeah. You can use that money for other things. I mean, it's his decision what they want to do. But like that money, you know, that much, because you spend that money on a wedding, it's gone. That's it. Yes. And you're praying to God that you got enough decent ass friends and relatives that you can kind of almost break even, maybe. But you're probably, but more than likely, you're not, because you're gonna get a lot of checks for $25 and $50.
Yeah, checks, nigga. You gonna get this card with this. With these 2 tens and a 5 in it, nigga.
Caught it up on the way to the wedding. It stopped by with the CVS.
And two raggedy tens, man.
Word, dirty ass tens.
Old people love some raggedy ass tens. A dirty tin.
One tin that got the scotch tape. You know what I'm saying? I really I'm kind of marveling at how some people are dealing with this world reset. And then some people are just not dealing with it at all. And I also, I mean, just taking it to another level, since we're on this topic, it also to me, and this is going to be a very black and white statement, and nothing is just black and white. But in a lot of cases, I think it's also showing, even the spotlight is even more now, like when you see like Trump and his people, and it's happened against other countries too, but especially here, where they're like, fuck them tests, go back to work. It's like, okay, it's almost like showing you what they're about. They're like, yo, we don't give a fuck about none of y'all. We need to get this money. So if y'all
But you know what? It's funny. It's not even, so somebody pointed this out. In terms of the country, yes, it's like the 1% looks at everything is how am I generating revenue. So we're all just human resources, literally. But the people who are out here protesting is not so much that they want to go back to work. They want the people that service them to go back to work. Like,
yes.
We want to be able to get what we need in our everyday lives, and you need to be at work to do it for us.
Yes, we need the people to go back to work so I can get a haircut, so I can get my nails done, so I can go, you know, to fucking Applebee's again and sit down. You know, and all the other shit that I want to go to the gun range or whatever the fuck. And, you know, again, so, and even that's just so bizarre. It's like, okay, let's go protest, like you said, opening up businesses because I want to get my hair cut or whatever. But I need to bring an AK-47 or AR-15 to do, like, what do you, it's just bonkers. It's really like, obviously there's been a divide in this country since it started, and the divide has gotten wider, and Trump has exploited that divide more than probably any president we've ever had. But the divide now is just bizarre. It's because it's not a political divide no more. It's really on some like, this is our country, and anybody and everybody else needs to do what we say. Period. You know what I'm saying? To that point, and actually I was going to bring this up. I don't know if it's because it probably is because of cameras, but we're seeing a huge uptick in Karens online.
Like, you know, I think they've always.
Or maybe maybe it's just people filming more.
It's people filming more because them white ladies always been like that from since ever.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of movies where they're Miss Millie or some shit like that. They've been like that forever.
Yeah, like late
goddamn ever.
Like the one woman in The Help. So named Bryce Howard's character and all that. Like you said, but now people are filming it. It's just, and the thing about the Karens is the Karens go at anybody. It ain't even, the Karens ain't even drawing that shit on racial lines.
Oh, it's just whomever doesn't do what they want.
Yeah, I'm white, and you're supposed to do what I say because
no,
I'm
not
white.
Just I'm white. I'm a white woman. And this country has been built around white women being praised and protected, not promoted or able to actually like do shit, but the white woman is like the precious, you know, can't be touched, can't be harmed, can't be upset, must be accommodated, which is why, you know, white women think like if you make a white woman uncomfortable, she gonna make everybody uncomfortable because how dare you make me a precious white woman feel away, and then she becomes like inconveniences for white women are legit. Like they feel put upon. It's an atrocity because nobody, they've never been taught that they should be inconvenienced, and they've always been taught that their tears work. So that's also why they weaponize their tears.
Even and then there's actually a my piece of my man Ike. He sent me an Instagram post, Instagram page rather, called I think it's called Karen's Gone Wild. Yeah, Karen's going wild, and they, every day they just post like a bunch of Karen clips, and it's just wild because like 99% of the time, maybe even 100, the Karens are just dead wrong. You're wrong. You're in the complete, and they be just overstepping their boundaries on some crazy shit. And if you buck back, then immediately, like you said, here come the tears, and oh my God, how dare you, and how could you hit me even though they're gonna hit you first? Like it's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. It's just wild. So maybe because people are filming, we're seeing more of this, but it's just
It's definitely because people are filming because we've seen this shit. When pre-corona, man, you saw this shit 2 to 3 times a week.
True. And these are the women who put Trump in office. You know, these are the women who
59%.
Yeah, exactly. Nope. Exactly. And I don't see any of these women changing their vote. So, you know, whatever. I saw a thing today where they said Biden is interviewing Amy Klobuchar to be VP. I'm like, bro, you fucking up, bro. Like, what you doing, man? That ain't supposed to be happening. So I don't know.
It's still to me.
Yeah, maybe just betting a bunch of people.
You always do that, man. You know, you can't. You know, you narrow it down to two people or three, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I get it.
And then let the best person win. Did y'all watch? You haven't been watching Insecure.
Nah.
Did you watch this week, bro?
I didn't watch this week, man. It's Last Dance this week, bro.
Oh yeah, yeah. I watch it after Last Dance, like 1:30 in the morning. So I'll just run through it real quick. So this week was interesting because this was a all Issa episode. The only person from the cast that she interacted with on episode was Kelly, and that was via a quick phone call. It was kind of about the. It was the day after last week, which was her event, and kind of her going over everything Molly said to her about her being selfish and a user and all that, and her kind of trying to write, you know, write herself from being that way and checking herself. And so it was really like a day in the life of Issa. It was a lot. It was definitely some really funny shit in there. A lot of funny shit actually. Kyla Pratt was a guest on the show. She was great. And then what's her name? Wendy Raquel Robinson was on again, who plays her mom. It was very interesting. And then next week, this week looks like it's gonna be like an all Molly show, because Molly and Andrew go to Mexico on vacation, so it's kind of like really isolated. So maybe they're doing a couple episodes where it's kind of, you know, kind of doing episodes kind of focusing on one character without interacting with other characters. But again, I really enjoyed the season because it's been a little different, and that's definitely been some funny shit, but it's been way more kind of drama, way more of a dramedy than it was in the past. I really enjoyed it. So for those who are watching, you know, hit us and email us and let us know what you think. What'd you think about The Last Dance, 9 and 10?
I thought it was, now that this is over, I think we can be a little more critical. I thought 9 and 10 were great episodes. I thought that The Last Dance as a whole was a great documentary. I think it was the most in-depth documentary that we would ever get with Michael Jordan's blessings.
Okay.
I don't think it was flawless. I think that there's some room to have some critiques here.
Okay, so give a couple critiques.
I still have a problem with the way that they have answered the question regarding Juanita. I am not dying on the hill that Juanita was necessary to be in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm not dying on the hill that his kids were necessary to be in this documentary, I should say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm with you, man.
What I'm saying is that you cannot say that they are not central to the story when you did, I think it was either 3 and 4. Episodes 3 and 4 were totally about Michael Jordan being Michael Jordan, becoming Michael Jordan, turning into this sort of megastar. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? And they never touch on anything. Now, listen, Mike is not wildly personable with his personal life.
Yeah.
At any point, and that's fair, and that's his business, and I'm not saying that that should have been there. But when I hear the director constantly dismiss the question or make it seem like the people that are asking that or are only looking for some level of salaciousness, listen, we get it. We live in a TMZ shade room world, mm-hmm. in which the idea is that we think he blocked Juanita because Juanita was going to get up there and say something crazy. Mm. That is all based on assumptions.
Because at this point, we don't know anything about their relationship, but like, they've been apart for like fucking 20 something. They've been like, what the fuck is she going? Like, they've been apart forever. Their kids are grown.
Like, and even aside from that, right? Because I think their grandparents, I think his
dad, yeah, like has, the fucking kids are, right? Like 30 and shit.
But so all I'm saying is, when that question is asked, you can't pretend that it's a bad question.
Yeah, like, why are you asking me that?
Yes, and then I've heard him on several occasions say that, you know. Like, listen, man, at the end of the day, Michael Jordan's people are the EPs. They had final approval.
Yeah, yeah.
You inherently have a level of criticism based on the fact that the main person that you're focusing on has ultimate authority on what goes in, or you know, what goes into the table.
Or doesn't go in the dock.
Like, that's that, like, and again, I don't think you can do a better job than what this guy did. But to, again, be dismissive and flip it about the fact that make it seem like, oh, that's not that big a deal. Like, no, dude, it kind of is that big a deal. And, yeah. And it's okay to acknowledge that. And we don't think that, you know, you were going to do anything better. But, yeah, man, Mike is going to have you direct shit and have it cut in a way that is not going to put him in a bad situation. If you look at, we had 10 hours of footage. They talked to, at minimum, they talked to, say, 8 teammates. They talked to like 8 teammates. They might have talked to about another 5 or 6 opponents. They talked to what seemed like about 10 columnists or reporters. And like, dude, like, nobody has a bad word to say. Like, no, you know what I'm saying? Like, what they did say was they gave what we already knew. Everybody knew about the Steve Kerr fight.
Yeah.
Everybody knew about that fight, dude. That's not a secret. And again, I'm not looking for salaciousness, but
tell me some shit I don't know.
Tell me some shit I don't know. And what this documentary did do more than anything was give context to a lot of people and what moves they made, whether it was Mike himself, whether it was Scotty with not going in the game and Scotty bitching about his contract, whether it was Horace leaving. It explained that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It explained that. And it gave some level of context. It gave some level of color, and I appreciate it, but the documentary is not without flaw. Like, there is a – it would be like Made in America, OJ's shit, and OJ's the fucking EP.
Yeah.
And you never talk about the abuse
that preceded that night. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It would be like taking that out and saying that that's not relevant to this case.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It absolutely is.
And you know what's interesting is, like, so in the last episode, I guess it was almost 9 or 10. I think it was 10. They talked to the kids. Like, very briefly, they just talked to him about, you know, how it was to go to Utah, and they decided to go because basically Utah is, like, the most racist. For those who don't know, Utah is pretty much the most racist stadium court in the league. Like, all the NBA players say, like, yeah, like, Utah is, like, I mean, not that the other places are Shangri-La, but, like, Utah is crazy. Like, they just – because it's literally all white. But anyway, they talked about that. But my point was, I'm like, okay, so they did sit down with the kids. So is that the one question you asked? Like, and that was it. It was like, okay, we good now? Like, so you got his daughter. They were separate. So it was his daughter was there, and the two sons were sitting together. But and they both answered the Utah thing, like why we didn't go and we didn't like it. But I'm like, that was it. Like, there's nothing else to say. Like,
that's what I mean by. Either he didn't push because he understood that pushing can, make this uncomfortable, right? Yeah. Or he was instructed not to do that. Either way, I'm not mad, but again,
you got to acknowledge it.
Come on, my nigga. Come on. That's insane. There's really not much you can talk about when you try to give a full color of Malcolm X. They speak to his wife and his, well, you know, God bless her, you know, sister.
They would
speak to her and to his kids.
Yeah, like, how can you not?
It adds color to this perceived person that we have here.
Yeah.
What is this person like when they are not being Malcolm X, leader of the mosque, right? You know what I'm saying? And so I think that to not have that, like they had his mom add that color.
Yeah, and people who don't know, and there might be people who are younger who don't quite know, like, you know, him and Juanita were married for quite a while. It wasn't like they were married for like a year or two. They were married for like fucking 10, 15 years.
Juanita, I think Juanita got about almost $200 million when they split.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get that kind of bread for being married for 9 months, Mike.
Exactly.
Like, it definitely don't work like that. And to both of their credits, I have never seen either of them speak, insinuate, suggest anything bad about the other.
I haven't even seen Juanita. I haven't seen a picture of Juanita in years.
Yeah, and I think she enjoys that.
Yeah,
I think she likes around. It like that.
Yeah, nice
she, easy. She, you know, I don't know if she went back to her maiden name, but she doesn't go by Jordan.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so God bless her. And again, she might they might have asked her. She might have said, fuck out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you, but I understand, but you can't act like this person who, you know, married Michael Jordan. And for those who don't know, and I'm not going to be salacious here, so she had the first child, which I think is named Marcus. And they were out of wedlock. They were kind of dating. Mike was still, you know, super famous. So he was kind of dating her, but he was definitely, you know, having some fun in the shy. And then she got pregnant again with the second boy, which I think his name was Jeffrey. And his mom put pressure on him. Plus the all the endorsements were like, you cannot have two children out of wedlock. And have Wheaties and
from McDonald's.
And you know, like, yeah.
From what I also understood, Juanita was like, look, nigga, you know, what is we doing?
Yeah, what are we doing here? Yeah, it's number two, nigga.
On
like,
some real, on some real regular black lady shit.
Yeah. Like you want me to walk around here with two kids by you and ain't got no ring or nothing?
And again, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm not saying it to be disparaging.
And, yeah. And I think the problem is that we operate in such a culture of salaciousness that people can't separate when something is legitimately a curiosity and maybe can give some context versus, oh, we just trying to, no, nobody gives a fuck about what Mike was doing on the road or what.
Yeah,
you know, we're not asking
that. Yeah, I don't want to know about
figure
that.
Out, yeah, we trying to figure out how, because I really am curious. It really did pique my curiosity for me to say, how was this motherfucker at home? Like, did he even have time at home? Like, is he one of
those people? That's really what I wonder. How much did he stay in the crib?
And I think we said that last week. Just the very fact that the story of Michael's parents were so important to his overall story also points to the fact that his family life as a father and husband himself should be important to his story.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you can't talk about how his father molded him, but not also talk about
how he molded
his father kids. Impacted his career, but not talk about how he then was a father to his kids off the court. Right.
Yeah. I also think, you know, I think they really did a shitty thing to Jerry Krause. I have to be honest. Like, I think it was really tacky how they dealt with him in this movie. And he did a fucking phenomenal job at being a general manager. Yeah. And for them to 25 years, almost 30 years later, still let Reinsdorf, the owner,
Off the hook. Like he wasn't. Reinsdorf sets it up almost like he wasn't involved in none of the decisions. Well, he was like, "Well, that's Jerry wanted to do, so I just did it." Word, nigga, like, you on the fucking team.
Well, that's what the richer people do. the richest people put the richer people to carry their water.
Yeah, exactly.
So you make exactly. You make.
And now that Jerry's dead, he really takes the hits.
And he can't defend himself.
Exactly.
And I think it was, I think it was just a shitty thing to do. And, you know, frankly, man, when people talk about Mike being an asshole, nobody was talking about, you know, Mike on the court and Mike's competitive nature is one thing. But, like, again, take the Jerry Krause stuff. Like, there's no reason to be, like, Jerry Krause is a grown fucking man, bro. Yeah. And I get it. We're in, you know, it's athletics and all of that sort of shit. But, like, you know, the constant ribbing of him, it was just, and honestly, they weren't even funny jokes. They weren't, you know.
That's one thing about Jordan. That's one thing about Jordan in this doc. He's not really a funny nigga.
He's
trying to be funny, but he ain't.
You can't be mean and corny. Like, you got to pick one, nigga. Like, you got to, you know, it can't, you got to, it doesn't work that way.
I agree with you in that. I did wish they had I don't know, it was like Craig Hodges or one of the guys that
they talked to Craig.
They left him on the cutting room floor?
Craig got about 30 seconds in like episode one. I'm telling you, bro, when they won the first, they talked to a lot of people. And again, I understand how this works, right? You have to compress all of this footage to make a complete story. So yeah. I don't want to suggest that this guy was purposefully going out of his way to edit shit out. I think they had a vision of what this was supposed to be, the end result was, and they had worked their way up and they had gotten those things. And that's perfectly fine. But, you know, it's going to come with questions. It's going to come with some critiques. And again, it is okay. You can have a great piece of work and still have people question some of the things that were done in it. It's not a slight to anybody.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question now. Now that the doc is done, we obviously have seen it. It seems to be from a sports writer standpoint, a lot of them anyway, and the older ones, an overwhelming thing like, well, after seeing this doc, there's no question that Jordan is the greatest of all time. There's no question about it. And my thing is like this. If you just go by pure stats, I mean, you got to put, you know, nobody, like we talked about on Twitter, it's amazing how much Jabbar is completely forgotten about, which is bonkers, who also has six rings and multiple
six MVPs.
Six MVPs. Like, this, like, it's insane how much he's forgotten. And then, but I think that shot is really more at LeBron. And my thing is, like, it's hard to say that because LeBron's not done. Well, now, will he ever get the six? I don't know. It's pretty tough. But
the reason
four or five, it's like, and with all the shit that he's done, does that mean, like, I don't know. What are you going to say?
The reason that I think that happens is because Mike played a full 13 seasons.
Yeah, 13, yeah.
And LeBron is a year 17 already.
Yeah.
So what they're comparing are sort of these, the burst. It's like Mike doesn't win the first 5 years or so, the first 6 years. But then after that.
Six, yeah, I think it's 6 years.
Yeah, whatever. After that, it's boom, out of the water.
Yeah, it's three, you know, and three more. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what people tend to look at. I've always said this. I've watched both of them play, play basketball, and I'm talking purely from a basketball pound for pound. I think LeBron is a better player than Michael Jordan, but there's nobody else I would want on my team. You know, the level of killer.
I think that's an important distinction.
Mm, yeah, the level of killer that is in Mike is not shown in the same way that LeBron has. So not that he wants to win more, which I fucking hate. I hate the idea.
He doesn't want it. What the fuck are you talking about?
Stop. One of the things this doc reminded us of was that, you know, they weren't breezing through the fucking playoffs every year.
Nope.
Okay, and they went up against some really good teams. I think that when we look at LeBron and we look at Mike, we don't really Mike is from a different era. Mm-hmm. He's from an era of this is your coach, this is your teammates, go out here and figure it out.
Yeah.
And LeBron is from an era of, I don't want that coach. I want that coach.
Yeah.
And I don't want that teammate. I want that teammate.
Yeah.
And so I think that it kind of, you know, you can't really cross era compare them in that way.
Yeah, because it's two different worlds.
It's completely unfair. You know, the wear and tear in their bodies, how they take care of themselves, how they come out every day. I don't think that's up for debate. I think if you had to look again at on a purely pound for pound level, I think LeBron does more things on the court. But I also think that, you know, Mike is fucking technically a phenomenal basketball player.
Like, absolutely.
Nothing, you know, he's almost flawless.
Yeah, no flaws.
But yeah,
no flaws,
in terms of technically playing. So I get it. And if you know, Mike is your GOAT or LeBron is your GOAT, whatever. Now, one thing I do want to say before we jump off of this is that it is not lost on me. And I want to say IRP to Mr. John, the white guy with the shrug.
Yeah.
And RIP to Mr. Gus.
Yeah.
So it is not lost on me, and I thought it was very important that we acknowledge that after his father passed, you know, Mike talked about his dad being his best friend. His dad would be on the road with them.
Mm-hmm.
that Mike, at the height of his career, still needed guidance and assurance, particularly from old black men.
Absolutely.
And not only did he know he needed that, he embraced needing that.
Absolutely.
He allowed that in, and he didn't. And listen, I will say, there are tons of reporters that would say he was incredibly kind.
Yeah.
He would ask them about their families.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody died, flowers would show up or stuff like that. You know, he was a very caring dude. And I think that this particular thing, you know, seeing that relationship between him and Gus, seeing him acknowledging his need for that relationship.
Yeah.
And you know,
remember Miss Tisa, I think her name was something like that, Miss Tisa. His wife, Gus' wife. She said that Mike would be like at the crib.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
chilling, like, you know, like at the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciated that.
So lastly, I thought it was and back to the other thing too. I thought how he got to Chicago was very interesting. You know, he didn't arrive with an entourage.
Yeah, no, he was dolo.
Yo, and he didn't even have
he arrived with his parents.
Yo, dude, no. When he arrived alone, dude that was supposed to pick him up from the airport wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so this is really this is very old black country shit. Old black country shit is you got a job, you had to go to Texas, then you got in your car and you went to Texas to figure that shit out.
Yeah.
And we be down there later. It wasn't all this, we gonna come and help you move in and we gonna come and coddle you.
The agent got you a crib.
Mike is driving himself.
Yeah. He's driving himself the whole time. He always drove.
And notice his plates are always vanity plates.
Yeah, always.
With him.
Yep. It's like air something or,
you know. it was just like, who's driving? Like, LeBron probably ain't drive himself longer than the 15 minutes in years, bro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They all got the fucking car services and shit. So there was a lot of things. Overall, I really enjoyed the doc. There were some flaws as there will be in any 10-hour, television series. But back to the LeBron thing real quick. I was really hurt, as most people were, that the season got cut short, because I felt like this season more than any other season, LeBron was like elevating to me to Mike level in play and popularity and like appointment viewing. And of course that helps because he's with the Lakers and all that. But I just felt like LeBron was really like elevating his whole shit like to that Mike level this season, like year 17, they had the best record in the league. That weekend before everything shut down, they had beat Milwaukee and I forget the other team they beat. Two best teams in the league. The Clippers. You're like he just was like on some other shit this season. I was like, okay, he's about to like put his if they would have won, and who's to say, I felt like he was gonna make that argument a lot harder than it was previous to that. So I don't know what's gonna happen with the NBA. They're trying to get sports back now.
No, they I think they're planning to come back in June.
Yeah, exactly. So they're trying to do that. So we'll see what happens. But, but again, they've lost a lot of time and, you know, it's not going to be the same. But overall, I did like Last Dance. I'll watch it again when it comes on Netflix. This week there's another doc, Lance Armstrong has a doc coming on. They're going to do two parts on him. There's a Bruce Lee doc coming on in a couple weeks. So there's some other sports docs to kind of keep us occupied. Real quick, I also wanted to mention, I just saw that Yankee Stadium is going to be turned into a giant drive-in movie theater this summer, starting in July. They're calling it, looks like a festival-like event called Uptown Drive-In.
I think that's a good idea. Drive-ins are going to be our return to outside entertainment for or to live entertainment for a while. Drive-ins are going to be the answer, so they got to figure out how to adapt to that.
Yeah, and there's no, you know, there's obviously no baseball season, so you might as well. And then so the rundown is going to be like date nights on Friday nights, Saturdays and Sundays, and a brunch kind of thing on Saturday and Sunday during the day. So that's all. That's the only thing that they've released as of now. But it'll be interesting.
In the parking lot.
I guess, yeah, because there's a lot of space around Yankee. Yeah, because I mean, I know they're not gonna let niggas drive on the grass, so it's gotta be the parking lot. I don't know, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Yeah, there's not a lot of details with these yet, but we'll see. Did y'all watch Real Housewives?
So I still haven't gone back, and I know that this week NeNe like closed the laptop, which is something, you know, artists can break out. I mean, people can break out of Zoom tapings if
they
feel
she closed it twice.
But that's so fucking NeNe. I got to go back and watch it at this point. You know, it's really weird, more so than before. You would think that my tolerance to watch stuff for whatever reason, you would think I had a higher tolerance to watch things that I was semi-hate watching, but I have a lower tolerance now. So I'd be like, oh, I'm going to come back.
Why do you think your tolerance got lower?
I don't know. I think I've actually watched less. I think I might have said this on here before. I've actually watched less network TV, period, since the shutdown, which has been interesting. I'll be like, yeah, this isn't really. Maybe it's something about my spirit. Maybe I'm just like, I don't really feel like dealing with this bullshit right now. I'll be like, let me go find some on Netflix. That's why I haven't gotten into. There's a with the exception of 90 Day Fiancé, I have almost completely abandoned reality TV. I was trying to stick, and that's just because it's so absurd, but I was trying to stick with it with Real Housewives of Atlanta. I still haven't watched Candy's Baby Shower. Like, that was the last episode.
Yeah, that's like...
And I haven't watched any of Atlanta with Love & Hip Hop Atlanta. I skipped all around Love & Hip Hop New York. Like, I just haven't, I don't know. I just haven't.
Yeah, I mean, like I said last week, it's been interesting to see this reunion be via Zoom. Because, in my opinion, it's actually making the women... Well, first of all, Andy's able to control it at points, I should say. Some points they talk over each other and they're yelling and all shit. But at certain, Andy can mute people, too. So, like, he could kind of control it better because if people start going too hard, like Candy and NeNe were having this huge argument, and he just muted both of them.
And that's what NeNe didn't like.
Yeah, and they kept arguing, but they didn't know they were muted. So they was like... You can see their mouths moving and back and forth. But I think also the fact that they're separated is making them more vicious because it's like, I guess it's easier to say some vicious shit to somebody who's not sitting right next to you. So yeah, they're saying like they cutting, man. They cutting deep. Like all of them is cutting deep on each other. You know, I mean, like I said, I sound like a fucking hypocrite because I watch this shit, but I always say, like, it's getting more and more uncomfortable to watch because it's like, damn.
No, it's not.
Y'all really don't like each other at all.
Well,
like,
not just, it's also getting more uncomfortable to watch because, and that the other season like this was that last season with Phaedra on it. It's like, it's one thing to deal with the petty when there's some levity to balance it out.
There's no levity.
But there's no levity. It's just. You know, it's just the ugliness, and that gets weighted even for us, you know, to watch. It's like, okay, we get it. Fuck, yeah, I don't like each other, you know.
So. Yeah, and they're grown women, and so to see, like, these couple of them grandmothers, legit.
NeNe like, is 50-something years old, like, man.
I think Marlo's about 50.
Marlo is allegedly me and Candy's age. She's allegedly 44.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either. But allegedly.
I don't believe that. Cynthia's 50, 51. I mean, he's 53. Grown, 53. Yeah, he's like grown women. And, you know, Cynthia actually is staying out of the fray a lot. Like, she'll say what she got to say, but she's not doing a back and forth. She's like, yeah, well, whatever, fuck you too. And kind of keep
right.
But yeah, it's just ugly, but I'll be watching this week. You know what I'm saying? So who the fuck am I? Let's talk about Versus real quick. So we had Nelly versus Luda. Nelly with a Teddy Riley level
of
malfunctioning internet issues. Terrible. Like
so. But here's the thing. I got to interject, and I might be skipping ahead of you. I'm sorry, Pam. So at this point, Swizz and Tim, or whoever they got running verses with them, are sending these guys sound kits.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi boosters. They have, I want to say Roland, like, helping with the tech.
Okay.
And like, a best practices list, like, a whole to-do list. And I think Swizz said this after the fact, like, you can tell who paid attention and who didn't.
Yeah, because at this point, it ain't no, like I said, last week when we had Jill and Erica, both their shit sounded great.
Yeah, and you know, Erica had a couple of glitches, but it was whatever.
It was small shit. Yeah, it was nothing. It didn't stop the flow. It was like, oh, okay, I can hear you now, that kind of thing.
Nelly shit was painful. And you could tell. So Luda brought his, for those of us, for those listening who don't know, Luda was a radio broadcaster in Atlanta before he was a rapper, Chris Lover Lover.
Yep.
So Luda came with his radio host energy.
Absolutely.
So you could tell he was trying to, like, keep shit going and get the momentum up. And Nelly was just killing his whole vibe. And he was trying so hard to fight through it. And it was just
Nelly
like,
would freeze, and then he would come off and come back on. And then even when he come back on, he wouldn't be ready. And then, because I felt like, obviously, like you said, Luda prepared. Luda knew what songs he was going to play. He knew the order. He had little things to say before each record.
Yep.
Nelly
and he was trying to throw Nelly alley-oops, and Nelly was on delay. I think Nelly knew what he wanted to start with, and he knew what he wanted to end with, and he didn't pay attention to, like, he knew he wanted to start with Tip Drill, and his last four rounds were really strong, which tells me he held stuff on purpose, but that middle area was just...
Yeah, but even then, just like, with, you know, I guess it's just, maybe it's just too many songs, whatever, even with Luda, like, there are a couple of records they didn't play. Like, Nelly didn't play Batter Up, which is a big record for him. You know, it was a big video when it was kind of like playing baseball with the girls. And I'm like, I ain't played Batter Up. That was a big-ass song for you, bro.
But he played three Bad Boy collaborations.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, nigga, like, I don't want to hear
nobody even plays music. Nobody cares about the Biggie duet. Like, we tried to forget that shit existed.
Yeah, no one cares about it. I'm like, nigga, why are you playing this? Luda didn't play B.I.B.I. He didn't play a couple other records, too. Did he play he played Throw Them Bowls, right? Yeah, he played.
Yeah, he played Throw Them Bowls. Two big rounds for him, for me, that I had totally forgotten about. I had totally forgotten Luda was on the Made You Look remix, or a Made You Look remix. I feel like there were more than one on the Made You Look remix, and on the Shorty Low, They Know remix. And he did those back-to-back, and I was like, those are sniper shots.
Yeah,
those are.
Yeah.
Huge here, huge there. You know what I mean? Like,
Luda definitely won this one. Next up is Beanie Man versus Bounty Killer.
Sound Clash shit.
See, I'm not a huge reggae guy.
Gunshot mean fire wide. Yes.
Lick that mean me live.
Sean's gonna be there being Brooklyn. I mean, I'm not either. I'm gonna go because I want to see how much. I want to see the comments first of all.
Yeah, because I like Brooklyn. I'm not gonna know.
No. I want to go and see the comments.
I don't even know if we're going to be able to translate all the comments because I know it's going to be in patois.
Right,
and
it's going to
be high.
But there's going to be a whole lot of more fire, the bang of it, all that. But also, the West Indian contingency is showing concern because of Digicel.
Because Jamaica's internet
provider, as to whether Digicel will prove itself able.
Well, hopefully with the kits, hopefully they can kind of get a boost to the signal.
Yeah, but it was smart because
very smart.
It's a big battle of DJs in Jamaica on Memorial Day weekend, I learned, but also here in New York, it's usually the West Indian Day Parade, so you're giving some of that energy.
It's a
massive, you know, international market, right?
Like
you go international now.
Yeah, so. It's gonna be like all the cats from
Canada,
Canadians, yeah. It's smart. It's very smart. It's very, very smart. I know they've been trying to. I've been seeing they've been, you know, whispering around. There was another one they were talking about.
What you think they're gonna say? You think they're gonna say they had 1.3 billion impressions this week?
2.4, baby. 2.4 billion.
2.4 trillion, nigga.
Trillion. Nigga, we worldwide, nigga. You don't even know about this shit here. You know, it was somebody else they were talking about. Damn it. It got so Swiss.
112 and Jagged Edge.
That's what it is. 112 and Jagged Edge.
How is that gonna work? First of all, 112 is broke up. 112 is split between 56 and 56. Because you got Deron and Q on one side, and you got Slim and Mike and two randos.
These niggas got these niggas got a Temptation review. <on. laughs>
Nobody, right. you ain't the real 112 nigga.
Exactly. And secondly, like
how I feel to be me, nigga.
How it feels to be me. But secondly, like how does that work? Is it a relay? Is it Zoom? Like you, because you can't have all of them.
All four of them niggas up in the studio together. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Song for song, it makes sense. But in terms of like getting the actual groups,
together.
I've also never seen 112 and Jagged Edge interact. So I'm like, do these niggas even fuck with each other? Like, do they
that's
like
a good
each
question.
Other?
That's a very good question. I've never seen them interact either.
I'm good. God bless. God bless. I wish y'all well.
Okay, but I'm good.
But if we being honest here, okay, after we get past like five or six, We struggling, my nigga.
Might get a little tight.
Not no might. Ain't no might. It's gonna be a little struggle. It's gonna be like, what album that comes
from? What was that? What was that? I don't remember this song. You remember this song? I saw that Brandy was down to do hers and her and Monica, but Monica as of now has declined. I've heard, I've seen things on Twitter about trying to do Keisha Cole versus Shanti. And I think that's all I remember right now. So I guess they're still trying to figure out who will be next. And then Sunday, this Sunday is Babyface doing the Way to Exhale out.
Nigga, we like 2 weeks away from like Petey Pablo versus Domino.
Right. But also Sunday is.
What the fuck? Nigga said Domino.
That's for like, that nigga not said Domino. But also
dog pound versus.
Listen, I think that Face may end up moving his shit on Sunday again because Sunday is also going to be Dre's Andre's tribute across a bunch of different platforms. I don't know that Babyface. I don't think it had been announced yet because Babyface already was supposed to have done this on Mother's Day.
On Mother's Day,
because of Dre's death, but now Sunday they've announced as of yesterday that it's going to be like the actual, not the janky ass tribute that fucking Teddy and Breon and Jamie Foxx.
I didn't even watch that.
Retarded, but like the actual.
Did you watch any of that?
I logged in and it was chaotic, and I logged back out. Jamie had Jimmy Love on the phone and was holding the phone up to the other phone so that Teddy could talk to Jimmy Love. It was like, so what's happening? Also, Jamie, why are you? You don't even go here. Why are you here?
Either you nor Breon
come from Uptown. Why are you here?
I was going to ask that. Like, did Breon work? Because like, why is Breon so involved with this? Like,
I don't know. I think Breon was just being Breon. I think it's because Breon manages Teddy now. And he was like, okay, we're going to do a moment, but Breon also does the Jamie shit. But it's like that wasn't for you to do, my nigga.
That wasn't your place at all. I was like, Breon, that wasn't his place. So I definitely want to see the Dre thing on Sunday. I think it'll be well done, and well deserved. So we'll talk about that next week as well. This nigga said Domino. That was funny. You know what I want to mention? 6ix9ine. I guess interesting. I don't know the term I'm quite looking for, but he's been home now on house arrest now for 2 weeks. It ain't been three. And just via his mastery of internet, social media, I should say. He's just shaking the trees. He's got this campaign against Billboard. He's going at Snoop. He put out a record that's, you know, top three or top four on the charts. I don't really like the song that much, but what the fuck does that matter? It's just interesting to watch this kid move in this social media era and have such a mastery of it, really, for lack of a better term.
Is he mastery? He's a master troll.
He's a master troll to the point where, like we talked about the other day, like he got on his Instagram Live when he first came home, and we're talking about, you know, 400,000, 500,000. This nigga had 2 million. Like he had the biggest audience ever.
What
do you think about all this shit?
Well, one, I think he studied under the master troller himself, Curtis Jackson.
Okay.
So I think he's taken. I think he has taken a lot of cues from 50. You know what I'm saying? In that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, the reason that he can come back home and fall right into line is because the real dark secret here is that a lot of niggas do this. There are a lot of people that tell. And fall back in line. And so that was, I think, a part of his speech, which was, you know, y'all really picking and choosing who y'all telling, you know, who's the rat. Y'all get to pick and choose. If y'all don't like them, then that's who you ostracize or whatever the case might be.
Exactly.
Now, you know, look, the kid is, I mean, I think he's whack. I think his shtick is whack. I think the nigga whole style is chump, to be honest. but you know, who are me? You know what I'm saying? I'm an old Brooklyn nigga, and yeah. I don't, and I think he's a liar. I think he's a good liar, right?
Like, I think he's a great liar.
I don't think any of those numbers are real. I think that what he's saying occurred with Billboard might have a hint of there may be some hints of irregularity, but like
how not to the point where you're losing, where you're not getting the number one spot.
Not just that, but how would he have narrowed down the amount of credit cards used?
Yeah.
Like that's just utterly ridiculous, right? Yeah. Like to think that that's what you're doing is just it's foolish. But you know what? When you're 21.
Yeah, 22,
you,
whatever.
You're 22 years old, you think that it's hot. I would love to see the old G's, the old heads, like Snoop, and like stop engaging with this.
But I was going to go into the Snoop thing because I that's what really kind of, even, you know, watching him has sparked my interest because I'm going to watch him. But again, watching Snoop trying to engage with him really was like, dude, you can't win this.
What
are you winning? It's not worth it to win shit. Like, what are you trying to win?
And realistically, what are we talking about? Are we talking about you 50 years old, my nigga? You going to the mattress for this dude?
Are you a grandfather? Dead ass.
No, like okay, you see dude in L.A.
Yeah.
Right? Are you going to send the goons for him? You going to the mattresses for this kid? You about to risk? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is this for exactly?
Yeah, yeah.
There's some on the internet, my nigga. Like, what are we really doing? What stakes are we risking here? Again, it ain't me, it's them. And so, you know, I guess if you got to live by some code, you got to live by that code. You know, God bless, and I wish you well. But I just, to me, the sign of a man, like, who he has beef with, who he interacts with, who he thinks is like to me, I would, if I'm Snoop, I would think he's beneath me.
Exactly. I would definitely think he's beneath me. He's got what, 1.5 songs who's compared to a guy who's been putting music out since 1992. So like, why are you even talking to this guy? Like you said, and then number two, like there's nothing to gain from it. And then number three, he's 22 years old. You can't. You're not going to be as nimble as him on this shit. Like you're not
at all, at all, my nigga. And that's okay because it's not our space.
Exactly.
And the more we engage, right? The more the Meek Mills of the world, mm-hmm. the more people that are respected engage with him, the more leverage it gives him.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And that's what I think that it is. You know what it's like? It's like Candace Owens. I never see anybody tweeting that nigga music because it's hot.
Yeah.
I only see impressions of him, images of him, where people are ragging on him doing this dumb shit.
Yeah, like, this nigga's a rat. How could we let him do this?
Yeah, he's a rat. And guess what, man? I'm sorry to tell you. There's a lot of dudes that come to your house and kiss your mom on the cheek and break bread with you that be telling too.
Yep.
And that's the game. That's the game you win.
And you know, like like Rick James said, Eddie, man, you should give your niggas no money. For him, the fact that he is telling, that's his trump card, because now he knows who else is telling. He knows. Like, he knows now that, oh, like, you know, he's in that world. Well, he's like, oh, that nigga's telling too. Oh, that nigga's part, and so it's like, he's got these trump cards now. Like, do y'all niggas really want to talk? Because I'm in protective custody, so y'all don't even know where I live. I'll just go on the internet and post some shit, and now your world goes, like Snoop, and now your world goes to hell.
Well, and he's in protective custody for whoever knows how long and whatever that means. But, you know, to me, you know, even everything about him was a troll. Like, he does this grand gesture for this Feed the Children Foundation, right? $200,000. They say, nah,
we're good.
You know, we're okay.
We Gucci. That.
Now, the only reason we know about this, not because they said anything, is because he released a statement because they wouldn't take his money, which we know was a bullshit PR move. Now, this is a legit organization. This is an organization that has taken in somewhere of like $60 million in 2018, right? Like, this is not 200 grand is actually inconsequential to their bottom line. 40% of their revenue is coming from corporate sponsors.
Yep.
So are they willing to jeopardize corporate sponsors for a $200,000 PR move?
It's absolutely just not.
But he goes online and he starts this campaign, and he plays himself off and pawns himself off as some pariah now, and people don't even want to take my money to do good. And I made because guess what? No other organization, and there are plenty out there, has said they got a $200,000 donation from him.
True.
Because it was complete bullshit.
It was bullshit. It was because I'm
you
like,
know what I'm saying?
I'm not saying he don't got 200 grand, but I don't know if he got 200 grand to just give.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. All this shit is a numbers game.
Yeah.
All this shit is a numbers game. Even with him pulling up these air quote numbers that he's showing the kids online, like, they believe everything. They don't do any research. They don't. They just take it and run with it. And that's all you need in this day and age.
Yep.
And sorry, I'm jumping in late, but the crazy thing is that his followers then actually attack the organization on all of his social platforms. And it's like, what does that do? Like, they literally went online to their Instagram and all the other stuff and was putting all kinds of, like, you know, cussing them out and putting snakes, you know what I mean? Just like childish ass shit.
Yeah. Well, he's a child. He's a child. He's got childish ass followers.
Right.
But it's just very, like I said, it's just a very interesting phenomena. And honestly, I don't know when it's going to go away. I don't know.
That's what I was saying. I hope that people grow tired of it.
I don't know.
Later.
People were geeked. Those kids were geeked the fuck up when he did that first Instagram live. They were excited.
Yeah, because what it does is it gives them fodder to talk about, right? Like, they get to debate whether or not he should have done this and whether or not he should have done that. And, you know, that's, you know, neither here nor there, because I don't live that life, okay? I live in the fucking suburbs. And I'm not running with gang members, you know, to keep other niggas off my ass.
Yeah.
But if I had chosen to run that life, I mean, there are rules to this shit. So you just kind of gotta, but he's telling that shit to some kid in Connecticut.
Yeah. Some kid
he's telling that shit to some kid that's living in Kissimmee.
Or yeah, exactly.
Kid that's, you know, like, he's not telling that shit to, what I would really love to see is one, a legitimate artist, and two, guys with legitimate street credibility, meaning they understand they have ties to folks that have been out there in that world and in that life. Like, stop engaging anything. The nigga in the interview asks you about him, yo, don't even answer him.
Yeah.
Go dead silent.
Next question.
I wouldn't even say that. I just go dead ass silent.
You know what I found interesting? I wonder why the Breakfast Club hasn't interviewed him, because they did in the past. They got big numbers. Angie has as well, and you know, Charlamagne. I saw a little quote from him saying basically like, yeah, you know, this guy's like, they end up dead in jail and he's not living by the code and all that. I'm like, well, he wasn't living by the code pre this, ever, man. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I wonder what changed.
I wonder if they're trying to take some, because, you know, they're, I know, for example, like Ebro took a stance at one point that he was going to stop interviewing certain rappers, right?
Okay.
And giving them a platform of any kind. So maybe the Breakfast Club is trying to take some responsibility, because also, you know, you're not going to get a genuine interview from this kid. Like, yeah, you're
he's going to troll the fuck out of you.
Right. And if it's not going to be entertaining, because now the Breakfast Club tries to position itself as, you know, a place for some level of actual real discussion, even though it's bullshit. But it's like, so I think
they're trying to get a little more credibility now.
Yeah, they're trying to get a little more credibility. They also do have, and I don't think they have a super young audience. I think they have kids that watch the clips. I don't think kids listen. So I think that they're really trying to have some, you know, a little level of responsibility and accountability. I would not want to interview that dude. Like, for what? Like, if you are an interviewer, you know that some people are just going to be a pain in your ass to interview. It's like, you don't even want to bother. That would be my take on it.
And as a radio station, I don't think he impacts your bottom line at all. I don't think he's not worth jeopardizing any relationship over, in my opinion.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I just don't think he's the, what they say, the juice ain't worth the squeeze.
Yeah,
he just ain't it for me. Now, I don't believe all the numbers he throwing out there. Do I think he had a spike when he first came out? Sure.
Yeah.
I think any video with women in colorful shorts, with their ass out, is gonna get a lot of hits. I mean, that is what it is. I don't know what that song sounds like at all. I've never heard it.
I also think he's so salty that he did, like, the reason he's going against Billboard is because, you know, his hits have been so effortless that he can't believe that he doesn't have a number one, which just speaks to a quality control issue, you know, in terms of charts. But it's like, that's his whole thing. It's like, if you're not gonna, it's kind of like Trump. Like, if he had lost the election, he would have said that somebody else stole the election.
Yeah, that's what he's going to say in November. They stole it. Yeah. Voting fraud and all that shit.
So it's the same shit.
So let me ask you one last question before you move on. Kind of what you were saying earlier, Sean, him saying, like, you know, how do the rules don't apply to me, because these guys tried to kidnap me, they fucked my girl, they did all these things to me, so why should I protect them? So do you think that this younger kind of generation looks at, like, the street rules as obsolete? Like, I listen to that, they'll have the rules for the young kids. Have they been passed down? Have they changed? Are they obsolete?
Well, to be quite honest, I think the rules have been passed down. And what we don't really like to acknowledge is that motherfuckers been telling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Nicky Barnes was released and sent Guy Fisher and all them dudes up the fucking river.
Yeah. That's the thing that people don't want to own. Like you said, a lot of niggas are snitching out here.
And had Dame Dash do a documentary on him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm just saying, we know one particular dude, you know, Alpo comes home and he's back in the same spaces. I will say when niggas is about that action for real, I think the rules of engagement changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a dude like that he's not invested in that world, right? Like, he's never been rocking with somebody in a situation that put their lives in danger, right? Or that put himself in real harm's way. He never put himself in real harm's way. See, there's no real, from my understanding, there's no real appreciation for what that means.
Yeah, he just does music.
He does music. He was food. He was food. And the one thing I learned growing up, man, is that wolves recognize wolves.
Yeah.
Okay. And they know who's about that action for real.
Yeah.
And they know who ain't.
Who's playing? Yeah.
They know who playing, and they know who ain't. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's why them niggas that's really about that business for real are a certain pedigree, mm-hmm. and the ones that ain't.
Yeah. And it is what it is.
And it is what it is. And if that ain't the world you live in, if that's not a space that you wander into, then that's perfectly fine and actually acceptable.
Yeah, No, you stay in your lane. You know what I'm saying? You know your lane and keep it pushing, you know? Yeah, so that's interesting.
So, sorry, Versus just officially announced 112 versus Jagged Edge on Memorial Day.
Oh, okay.
I need to know how this is going to work.
I'm good.
So Sean's good. Like, update.
Brother being the link.
I can listen to that battle in a 35-minute playlist, nigga.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, shit. I wanted to wrap up just real quick with Ahmaud Arbery and a little bit about Breonna Taylor. So I saw that there. The FBI has opened up an investigation, or the GBI, I'm not which one, on the guy who filmed the Ahmaud Arbery murder. The defense tried to slip out him, you know, walking through the construction site of the house, and apparently, I guess he was arrested. Looked like unduly arrested back in 2017. Because he was sitting in a park in a car, like just rapping to himself, minding his own fucking business. And the cops ran up on him and he's like, I'm on break for my job. I'm just trying to, you know, unwind here. You know what I'm saying? I ain't bothering nobody. So that kind of backfired. And, you know, the footage of him walking through the construction site didn't work because the guy who owns that house is like, nothing was missing. And several people on my video feed have walked through this site.
Right, you go through to look at like what the floor plan looks like.
Yeah, oh, okay, that's where the kitchen gonna be. Oh shit, that's kind of yeah. He didn't do shit. He was there like 5 minutes, maybe, you know, before he went up on his jog. So the little tricks that they're trying to, like, you know, assassinate his character don't seem to be working. But again, in 2020,
it's fucking exhausting.
It's exhausting, and
it's exhausting.
And nobody's taking nothing for granted here, but it feels more and more. Oh, then one of the murderer's sister posted, admitted that she had posted pictures of Ahmaud's dead body, saying that she's a true crime fan, so that's why she did. It's ridiculous. And then last week we kind of mentioned this Breonna Taylor case. Hasn't been much more movement on it. She was an EMT in Louisville. The cops had a warrant to arrest somebody. They went to her house, kicked her door in, shot her dead. Come to find out that they were in the wrong house and the person they were looking for was already in custody. So they're like, wrong. And I said, she's an EMT. She has been obviously, you know, helping people during the coronavirus thing. She's an upstanding citizen. But another one that they completely tried to sweep under the rug. So I want to see where this goes, because this is as bad.
Yeah, apparently they shot through the window.
Yeah,
and through the window, like
eight times. And she's like, he's sleeping. So basically, she didn't even wake up. She died.
It's on some like ambush shit.
Yeah, for no reason. Wrong house, and the person was in custody anyway. Like, it's just wrong on top of wrong. So I just want to keep. I just want to keep an eye on this case because it's fucking awful, man. It's fucking awful. And again, they swept this under the rug too. So I guess they're trying to, you know, people are trying to drum up as much support for this as they can to get these police at least fired, if not prosecuted. Prosecuted, I think, will be a stretch, but at least fired from the job, because I think right now they're on like administrative leave. So that's it. Did you have anything more to say about these cases?
No. It's just, you know, all of this feels just that much heavier in a time like now. It's like, even in the fucking midst of a goddamn lockdown, y'all can still find time to kill some niggas. Aren't you? Isn't your schedule full with complaining about wearing a mask and protesting so you can go get a haircut? Like, don't you have some other shit to do right now?
Yeah, than to be shooting at us.
Right.
Yeah, I saw that the crime, not surprisingly, the crime stats in New York are like way down because I see nobody's outside. The murders are down. And
right.
Everybody's got, you know, home. Like, so in their neighborhood. So people know people in their neighborhood. So it's, you know.
Right. Well, also, the other thing is like you said, everybody's in the house. So even stuff like burglaries are down because niggas is home.
Niggas is home. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm not coming up in your house while you in your house.
Exactly.
Like, we ain't hit that yet, you know.
And nobody's going for, like, 10, 12 hours in a day because you went to work and went out at night.
Right.
People are more than likely in the crib. Or if they went out, they're coming back to the crib shortly, you know.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, you know. Yeah, I just wanted to mention the Breonna thing and the Ahmaud thing. You got anything else you want to cover?
I want to mention this kid that I discovered this week who actually turns out he's a Disney kid named Ramon. Oh, what is Ramon's last name? But he, you guys have seen the clip. The little boy who went viral preaching about homework.
Oh, he's a Disney kid?
He's a Disney kid. Yeah, he's on a show called Let It Loose, Turn It Loose, something. But he's on like a little Disney family show. And he's in a tour production of Lion King as Simba. So he's already like a super talented Ramon Reed. So he's already like a super.
Oh, we lost your volume. We lost you. I don't know what happened. Something came loose.
I think her.
I was muted by accident.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
I'm muted by accident. So basically, his mom called him on camera. He was supposed to be doing his homeschool, and I guess the browser froze, and he started preaching about everything that was going on, including restarting the browser. But you can tell this kid, and this is why I think it went viral, because he actually posted the next day, like, I don't know why this went, like, he was stunned that it went viral. But the thing about Black culture, even if you don't rock with the Black church as an institution, Black church as a culture is so innate and so deeply ingrained in all of our souls.
All of us.
That just like you could honestly know more about church protocol from playing church at home with your cousins than you might know from actually going to church. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and he was doing the preacher call and response and the sing preaching and the hooping and hollering. And I mean, all of his notes were perfect. Like,
perfect.
Like all of it, all his references, all of it was I have watched it so many times.
Yeah, exactly.
I have watched it so many times.
He nailed it. Like, okay, you've been to church. Like,
you've been every Sunday. You did Monday night, Wednesday Bible study, Thursday, choir practice, Friday. You church, like, you did every day.
Sunrise service on Easter. you visit in other churches.
Right,
you've been there. You go to the retreats. You're going to revival. You know what I'm saying? On a Friday night revival.
Right. You're going to the conferences. Everything. The lock-ins, all of it. But he hit all of it. And it's funny, but it also feels comforting when you see something that you recognize so thoroughly and that so many other people recognize so
right away.
Thoroughly. Like, immediately.
Two notes in, I was like, wait. This kid's great.
Amazing.
Amazing. Like, I've heard this sermon. I mean, with the different words.
Yeah, all I needed was a Hammond in the back. Yeah. All I needed was organ keys. That was
he was like, and I was like, what? I was like, okay.
Yeah. He was like, wait, see what happens. Like, it's just so great.
He killed it. Yeah, so I didn't know he was a Disney kid.
And he paused it. And he paused it. Like, he was just so good. It was just so good. So I just want to shout out to Ramon Reed.
Yeah, I didn't know he was a Disney kid, but, it makes sense that he should be performing somewhere if he can do that.
Absolutely.
He's amazing.
Absolutely. He's amazing. So shout out to you, young Ramon.
Exactly. Great kids. You got anything, bro? You good? Yeah.
Nah, I'm good.
Okay. Yep. I might do that drive by this weekend though. Come give me a couple links and some potato salad.
I do have one more shout out. I want to shout out, are you guys familiar with the platform Because of Them We Can? Or Because of Them They Can?
Mm-mm.
You've seen it. It's the one where they've always posed little kids as Black history icons.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So the founder, Unique, who is my soror, she has started a game. The game is called Culture Tags. And it is basically like it's basically a game where you have to guess hashtags, right? So like it might be like I K Y F L, and you have to guess. Like, I know you fucking lying. You know what I mean? So it's so she's creating. So I watched her online take this from like idea to concept as she was going through the Kickstarter, as she was like testing it out over the holidays and having family play it to see how it felt. She did a couple of live rounds and all that stuff. So it has finally shipped out. I got my box in the mail yesterday. It's so official and waited, and I can't wait to be able to be around people again to play. But it also just shows how creative we are. Like, even after the Georgia shutdown, a lot of Atlanta people were posting like this long ass hashtag without saying what it meant. And it was, I don't give a fuck what's their mayor's name?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I don't give a fuck what, whatever. The Kemp. Governor, I don't give a fuck what Kemp says. I'm staying my black ass in the house. So it was like, ID, you know, GAFWKSI. You know what I mean? But like, if you looked at it, it only took a couple of seconds for black people to be like, oh, I know what that means. You know what I mean? So she's created a game out of like that. And I think, and there's different categories, like stuff you say in church, stuff like mama say, stuff like that. So congratulations, Unique. You guys look out for that Culture Tax. It has an Instagram account and I think a Twitter account. And pick it up, because that will be a good game night situation. Okay. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, so we're going to wrap it up on that. Everybody out there, be safe. I know it's getting a little hard to stay in with this weather breaking.
Yeah, man. They've been out here playing salsa every night.
Oh, yeah, they are
here. Salsa and bachata every night.
Oh, yeah, they are here. But be safe. But if you're going out, like, please at least put the mask on. God damn. You know, like, just at least put the mask and the gloves on. Just do something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's it. We wrap it up, and we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.